U.S. officials today presented justifications for the overnight missile attacks on military targets in southern Iraq. The strikes were carried out by Air Force bombers and Navy ships in the Persian Gulf after Iraqi forces seized the Kurdish-controlled town of Erbil over the weekend. The town is inside one of the two no-fly zones in Iraq, policed by the United States and its allies.
President Clinton said the aim of the missile strikes was to force Saddam Hussein to pay a price for the latest act of brutality, those his words. In a briefing this morning, Defense Secretary William Perry said the issue went beyond Iraq's attack on Erbil. He said Saddam Hussein poses a clear and present danger to the security and stability of the region and the flow of oil to the world.
We have several reports this half hour on today's developments, on the rival Kurdish groups in northern Iraq, on how Arab countries have reacted to the U.S. strikes, and on how the new Islamic government in Turkey views the situation. We begin with NPR's Martha Raddatz.
For 30 minutes this morning, Iraq's southern skies were filled with U.S. cruise missiles. From the sea, U.S. Navy ships launched 14 Tomahawks. From the air, B-52s fired 13 additional guided missiles. The Iraqis had time to sound the air raid alarms, but there was little chance to do anything else. President Clinton called the U.S. strike a strong response to Iraqi aggression.
Our missiles sent the following message to Saddam Hussein. When you abuse your own people or threaten your neighbors, you must pay a price.
And the price in this case was 27 air defense sites in a sparsely populated area in southern Iraq. The targets included command and control centers and surface-to-air missile batteries. The Pentagon has not completed its bomb damage assessment, but the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph Ralston, was pretty confident of the outcome.
We certainly have indications that, by all means, the raid was effective.
It may have been effective in taking out targets, but thus far it seems to have little effect on Saddam Hussein. Hours after the missile attacks, the Iraqi president was on Iraqi TV, which was broadcast by CNN, claiming the American bombing was a flop.
We had only very light losses, thanks be to God. This has been a failed attempt by the American. May God have mercy on our martyrs. God is most great.
Allahu Akbar.
God is most great.
وَلْيَخْزَى الْخَاسِئُونَ.
And may these cowardly aggressors be defeated.
Saddam went on to say that many of the U.S. missiles had been knocked out of the sky by Iraqi defenses, but the Pentagon has no evidence that happened. Yet even if all 27 U.S. cruise missiles hit their targets, the attack is hardly crippling to Iraq. A similar cruise missile barrage was launched at Iraq in 1993 in response to the supposed plot to kill former President George Bush on a visit to Kuwait. But Secretary of Defense William Perry says this may not end the U.S. missile assault.
Whether or not we conduct them and how we conduct them and against what targets is a matter still to be determined. One factor which will influence that determination, but not the only factor, will be the actions of the Iraqis over the days and weeks ahead.
Perry would not describe any specific set of demands that the U.S. has placed on Saddam, saying only, "We expect to see changes in his behavior. We will be watching very carefully." But Perry was quite specific about why the U.S. launched these missile strikes, and it is not simply because of the reported slaughter of Kurds in the north or the aggressive action Saddam has taken in response to the Kurdish fighting.
Our national interests are not tied to which party prevails in this conflict in northern Iraq. But we do have vital national security interests in maintaining security and stability in the region. These vital interests include maintenance of stability, protection of friendly nations, including Israel, Jordan, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and other Gulf states, and protection of the flow of oil.
In other words, the secretary explained, if the Iraqis, emboldened by success against the relatively weak Kurdish forces, saw no reaction from the international community, they might move against their neighbors to the south. And it is clear from the missile attacks and the expansion of the southern no-fly zone that it is the south the U.S. wants to protect, despite the fact that Saddam Hussein is not moving south. Saddam's army continues to shell areas in the northern no-fly zone. But White House spokesman Mike McCurry says the U.S. won't try to evict Saddam Hussein's troops because to do so would require U.S. ground troops, and the president, said McCurry, never seriously considered using them. So why expand the southern no-fly zone from the 32nd parallel to the 33rd? Joint Chiefs Vice Chairman Joseph Ralston says that it will hurt Saddam's capabilities throughout Iraq.
There is a major military training area within that zone, as well as two major air bases with airplanes. By denying this airspace to the Iraqi regime, we have given ourselves more warning should he decide to move to the south against our friends and allies. We have also made a significant impact on his ability to train. That training area, the denial of that training area, effectively denies him the ability to train his ground forces with their air force.
But none of this seems to bother Saddam Hussein either. He labeled the expanded no-fly zone null and void.
They have canceled the no-fly zone, so ignore these and strike them and depend upon God.
The U.S. has been forced to depend on a fax machine to continue its threats. The White House sent a warning to Saddam Hussein today to comply with international law, but Iraqi officials refused to accept the warning, so the White House faxed it to them instead. I'm Martha Raddatz in Washington.